the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. I'm here with my co-host, Brooke Medina. We've got a special guest, the director of policy from the Pelican Institute, Eric Peterson. Eric is a graduate of Tulane University, the Green Wave, and we're really happy to have Eric here. He's written a lot. He's an expert on technology policy, and so we'll talk a little bit about that towards the end. But Brooke, Eric, how's it going today?
It is going well, Ray. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, doing good over here too. Everybody surviving quarantine?
Absolutely. I'm actually doing really well. I kind of talked last week about all the ways that I'm blessed through this quarantine, and I know a lot of people feel that way as well. And so in some ways, I've been a little bit happier than normal, so that's always been good.
Is it because you're not in the office with me, Ray? Is that why you're happier?
Well, I don't miss the traffic yet, so that's one positive. But I've actually been a little bit more efficient in my work, having not to commute at all. So that's been a positive, but it is hard kind of just being cooped up to some degree. I mean, I think I handle it better than some, but it can be difficult at times.
We have certainly found the introvert in this podcast already.
I do have introvert tendencies, although I'm not a true introvert, but I do have introvert tendencies.
You're much more reflective, and I feel like during this quarantine, based on our interactions, that you have had more time to reflect and spend more time just kind of in deeper thought. At least that's my perception. Don't know if you agree with me.
No, I think that's true. I tend to gravitate towards deeper thought, so sometimes I tend to be a little bit more of a thinker than a doer. But let's talk about Louisiana, because that's been in the national news a lot. And I love Louisiana. I love parts of New Orleans, but I particularly love areas like Houma and Lafayette, where Cajun culture is big. But I wanted to talk about Louisiana and what's going on there, because you guys are in the national news a lot. How is it different than North Carolina when it comes to coronavirus?
Yeah, well, Louisiana and New Orleans in particular are different than just about anywhere else in the country. I often say that New Orleans in particular is the furthest north in the Caribbean, and we certainly have a lot of that culture. You know, right now you caught us in the middle of crawfish season, in the middle of festival season. You know, Jazz Fest would be going on right now. So all that stuff certainly has us bummed out in New Orleans. We've actually been getting some good news as far as the coronavirus is going. Obviously, we've been in the news a lot for the spotlight. Our numbers are much higher than a lot of places are nationally, but that's actually finally starting to level off. Just a few days ago, Governor John Bel Edwards got on and gave us some excellent news. You know, so far there's been almost 15,000 cases of coronavirus and 512 dead, and that's obviously, you know, just a really devastating number for the state. That said, it's starting to flatten out, and while we originally thought we were going to have to put people in the convention center, we were going to be short on ventilators and beds, that no longer seems to be the case. So I think the cases are still going to be going up for a little bit, especially the reported cases as testing gets better. But I think our capacity to handle it's actually going to hold, and that's great news for the state of Louisiana and especially the people of New Orleans, where this has really hit us hardest.
Eric, let me ask you about the government response. How would you rate maybe John Bel Edwards and just Louisiana in general? Because really, Louisiana is the epicenter in many ways for how government can screw things up when you look at Katrina in 2005 and just the disaster with that. How do you rate the government response, not necessarily compared to that, but just in general in terms of coronavirus? Because there's been a lot of obviously pushback to Trump to some degree and some governors in some states. But how is Louisiana handling this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, both John Bel Edwards and Mayor Cantrell, who we disagree with on some policy and agree with on some, have, you know, taken this very seriously. And I think if you're looking for any kind of correlation in response, it's how serious were people taking this? early and kind of what does that look like for the curve? And, you know, there were certainly has been some issues in New Orleans. We had a big St. Patrick's Day party down in the Irish Channel that people love to come out. They've got floats. It's kind of like another day of Mardi Gras. And all those floats were canceled. They ended up breaking up some of the parties and stopping people from going out in the bars. And this was about 2 weeks before the state went into lockdown, and people were a little upset at the time. But I think with hindsight, you know, that kind of probably looks like the right call. You know, there's been a lot of criticism for not closing down Mardi Gras. I really think that has been really unwarranted given where we were at the time. I don't think people would have complied with it very well. It just wasn't on people's radar. So given that things are looking better, I certainly think they've had to make a lot of hard choices in putting us into lockdown, and it certainly had some big effects on the economy. But I think overall, given the information they had and given where we're looking, they've done their best to make a, you know, good with a bad situation.
So when it comes to the economy, what are some of the primary industries there that drive the Louisiana economy?
Yeah. unfortunately, there's not been a lot driving the Louisiana economy. There was actually a recent study from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. It came out yesterday, actually, where Louisiana's economy grew by 1.3%. This was the lowest in the South outside of Kentucky. It was tied with Mississippi. Kind of digging into the numbers a little more there. More than half of that was just growth in the oil and gas sector, given that the oil prices have hit a record low pretty recently. That's going to be in bad shape kind of as we move into 2020. Great for consumers who want to drive, but of course nobody is driving right now anyway, so it doesn't do us a whole lot of good. Other than that, tourism is obviously huge. More than 12% of the people working in the state of Louisiana are in the hospitality sector. That's from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And more than 65% of the people in the initial layoffs work in that sector, not in just Louisiana, but nationally. So, you know, kind of translating those numbers to Louisiana, in New Orleans in particular, which is even higher on the travel and hospitality, the economic effects are going to be devastating. Again, we didn't have a lot of room like North Carolina does that has a pretty strong economy. North Carolina grew by 2.3% last year, which is right at the national average. They're humming along nicely. Our margin for error is much, much smaller.
Eric, I know that a lot of people don't know this, but South Louisiana has a lot of oil rigs off the coast there. What do you know about the impact of that? I mean, as a policy director, obviously oil is getting hit hard with the loss of demand, just kind of catastrophic, not just in the United States, but really across the world. I mean, how is that going to impact your offshore drilling industry in Louisiana? I mean, what kind of things can you comment on that?
Yeah, offshore drilling is obviously incredibly important to the state of Louisiana. But even more important than the drilling aspect is actually the processing and refining of it. Because New Orleans is such a great port hub, you know, we're really a place that the oil goes in, comes in crude, it gets processed and either comes into this country, but you know, more recently, just due to the American energy revolution, has been going out to the rest of the world. So as oil prices continue to decline, a lot of the work that they'll be doing in the processing and shipping and manufacturing of those petrochemicals is really going to take a tough hit. That's also going to, you know, take a tough hit on the Louisiana budget. They say that for every dollar in the price of oil drop, it's about $10 million out of the state budget. We were looking at $60 for a barrel of oil. It's now down to 20. So you can do the math. That's about $400 million just there. Obviously, you know, we don't know what it's going to be like for the rest of the year, but that's just a kind of back of the calculation math on this. So that's certainly going to have a big effect on the Louisiana economy. And again, it was responsible for more than half of the growth of the Louisiana economy last year was that oil and gas sector.
Wow. Okay. So now let's kind of fast forward to November. Assuming that things get a little bit better in Louisiana, North Carolina, all across the nation with COVID-19, and we're back in election mode, what are some of your forecasts for Louisiana? I know it's not necessarily a swing state like North Carolina, but just curious what the landscape is over there.
Well, we actually had our elections last year, as far as our governor goes and all of our state reps. We do those weird off-year elections. We do our jungle primaries, which are a lot of fun. So Governor...
Wait, jungle primaries?
Brooke doesn't know about the jungle primaries.
I don't know about this stuff. Y'all got to tell me.
It makes Louisiana politics so exciting. So Eric, why don't you take it away? You're the expert.
So the jungle primary, rather than doing a Republican or Democrat primary, all the candidates get thrown in to the jungle. And if one candidate is able to get over 50%, that candidate then wins the seat. If no candidate is able to get over 50%, then it is a runoff between the top two. So we had that. We returned Governor Edwards, but there was also a big turnover in the legislature because we have such strict term limits in Louisiana. About 30% of the legislature is new, and they're going to be facing some really tough challenges coming up. We had only been in for 1 or 2 weeks before this whole situation happened. I was actually at the Capitol on the Monday where they voted to adjourn. It was quite odd and surreal, and especially for those who are just kind of getting their feet on under them. It's something I'm sure they're not soon going to forget.
What about when it comes to federal elections? Is Louisiana solidly red? I'm very unfamiliar with how...
Obviously we'll be taking part in the presidential election. Senator Cassidy is up this year as well. He was first elected in 2014, beating out Mary Landrieu. A lot of folks really just haven't been paying attention to this very much. Joe Biden has kind of been focused on his podcast and talking to folks that way. Trump.
Think he's doing a good job, by the way?
I have not listened to Joe Biden's podcast, so I couldn't comment. Trump is mostly talking to people through those press conferences. Hasn't had a lot of time to do on that. I would only say one thing about the presidential election. I saw yesterday a reporter asked Trump about pardoning Joe Exotic. Trump said he had not had time to watch Tiger King yet. So I will be interested to see how the Tiger King pardon of Joe Exotic starts to go out in the 2020 section or 2020 cycle.
If Twitter's any barometer, and it's certainly not a political barometer, but if it is, he may be able to coast to re-election if he pardoned Joe Exotic, just for the sheer lunacy of it and the sheer popularity that may create for Trump. So I thought he was actually smart to answer in the way that he did. He's like, I'll look at it, So it certainly would be a more popular pardon than former Illinois Governor Blagojevich, having trouble with my Slavic name today.
Yeah, can I actually give the hot take on this podcast? I know we're only 13 minutes in. I think, as somebody who believes strongly in criminal justice reform and has no love for Governor Blagojevich, having lived in Illinois while he was governor, I think, Trump probably made the right decision there. He was convicted, right, of trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat.
Right.
The FBI was looking into him on that, but he never actually did it. There was no money that exchanged hands. He ended up appointing somebody, and it didn't look like that was done for any kind of political favoritism. So given that his session or his sentence was so long, it certainly did not feel like the punishment fit the crime. Just kind of looking at him now, he has obviously, been through a lot. He's bankrupt. He missed his kids growing up. I have no sympathy for political corruption, but I think oftentimes we have to make sure that the sentencing is actually on what happened, not for political retribution.
Was he on a reality show with Trump? I can't remember.
I believe he was on Celebrity Apprentice.
That's what I thought. That was my only issue with the pardon, was that there was a previous relationship. But that's not unprecedented in government or anything. So that was the only thing that – I actually agree with you on the actual assessment of the crime. It really wasn't as bad as what some people in the media made it up seem to be.
Yeah, his wife was also on a reality show called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. It was a weird Survivor takeoff where they kind of put celebrities on a desert island and they had to deal with that.
Let's go ahead and talk about 5G conspiracy theories. That sounds way more interesting to me than having to be quarantined with some of these people. So, Eric, what's going on? Apparently, 5G is causing the coronas. Is that correct?
Yeah. 5G, for those of you who don't know, it's just the newest kind of communications technology. They have these great little small cell devices. They kind of look like a pizza box. They go up in your neighborhood. And all of a sudden, your phone, if it's 5G enabled, is supercharged. You can go from downloading a Netflix movie in a few minutes to downloading it in a few seconds. It's going to enable all kinds of great technology like autonomous cars, your smart devices, all that kind of stuff that's going to keep us connected all the time. There's been a lot of conspiracy theories going around about 5G previous to the whole corona situation. The kind of most popular one is that they were putting up 5G to cause cancer. This is, it was really kind of popular with the chemtrail crowd that they were going to shoot these waves into your body. They were going to mess with your DNA and give you cancer for population control or whatever. They have now moved. Can't say that the 5G conspiracy crowd is not trying to find a great novel way to talk about this. Where because China has been really pushing the 5G, Huawei, their telecom company, has been deploying all over the world, and we can talk about that. And so since Wuhan obviously has a lot of 5G, and that's where Corona started, that 5G must be causing the coronavirus to spread. They're shooting coronavirus into your cells. and this is how it's spreading. John Cusack, a great 80s actector, tweeted that 5G was causing some health issues. But this has really kind of caught on. Disappointingly, there's been some reports in Great Britain of folks actually setting their 5G towers on fire because they think that 5G is causing them to catch coronavirus. I would also say this goes back to some other interesting conspiracy theories about how this is, again, kind of population control and tracking, and that the coronavirus got out from the celebrities and the rich people who were drinking the blood of the young to stay young.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and this is all kind of part of it. So for those of you who pay attention to Alex Jones, I'm sure I'm not telling you anything new. for those of you who kind of stay off of that, you might see some stuff coming around about that, but I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I can tell you that 5G is in fact not giving you the Rona.
Ray, had you heard any of these?
I heard a little bit about it. I'm not an expert on it, and I don't believe it per se, but I don't know if I know enough to weigh in, and give an opinion. But Eric, I want to ask you, because you mentioned this in the article on the Pelican Institute site about 5G being able to solve the logjam of signals when you go to a football game. So if you want to go over to Red Stick and see a Coach O over there in Baton Rouge and see LSU football, how does that help alleviate the problem of, you're packed into a stadium? And I know a lot of people, they want to have access to internet, but don't. I think that's the reason why a lot of these young kids are leaving football games today, especially in these big climates like the SEC. They're just scattering out after they take their selfie because they want to post their pictures. How does 5G help alleviate that problem in the stadium?
Yeah, I can tell you at least this year, nobody was leaving LSU games early to post their selfies, but that was because they had an all-time great season. I'm not even an LSU fan, and I can tell you that much. But I will spare everyone my Coach O impersonation. Ray, I think you did a pretty good job there. The thing about 5G is it's just on a different kind of spectrum than your kind of traditional signals that we're getting now. Usually they have this big kind of cell phone tower if you go out to the country, or if you go downtown and you see this big building with this big tower on top. That's the one that's kind of shooting out all the signals to your cell service. Because they have these small cells kind of connected directly to your phone, the waves can be much smaller, but they're much more tightly compressed. That basically allows you to get much, much more data on your phone to a much quicker period of time. but also really cuts down on your latency. And so that's what makes 5G really interesting for stuff, again, like autonomous vehicles that need to be talking to each other constantly, right? If they're off a half a second in their ability to communicate, that can be a big issue, right? Led to people getting run over. Or stuff like telemedicine, which we're using a lot more of, right? Because you need an uninterrupted signal and also excellent video quality, right? If you're trying to show your doctor something that's on you, you know, a rash or something like that. And you got to make sure that you can communicate and they can see what you're talking about. There's often even been speculation that, you know, 5G is going to let for online surgeries where you go to a hospital and the expert doesn't even need to be there, but he can put some stuff on his hands and kind of control it remotely. But that kind of technology is only going to be available with 5G and getting the, you know, wireless or communication signals to be much faster with much lower latency. And 5G is the evolution to that.
So what is the policy argument against 5G then? Because I know in your article that you wrote, there were legislators and there was pushback against it. And I know even here in North Carolina, I was looking it up. And although North Carolina State is named a hotspot for 5G innovation, which is wonderful, there's a petition going around on change.org to stop 5G in North Carolina. And they cite things like it causing cancer and being a health issue for those with electrosensitivities. So what are you hearing on the policy front that's making it difficult to normalize this?
Yeah, foremost, let me give a big shout to Representative Jason Sain, who worked really hard in North Carolina to get your 5G policy right. You know, he's been a real leader at the states on this issue, and you all are really lucky to have him. You know, I think you hit the nail on the head. A lot of it's a health issue, right? People go online. Sometimes they even use their cell phones, right, to start Google, you know, 5G health issues, and you run into some of these kind of conspiracy theories that people have found, and are especially, again, breaking out during the coronavirus thing. I would say in terms of practical policy things, there's a few, right? One is that you have to put up these small cells everywhere, right? And oftentimes there's a lot of red tape in the way, especially from localities in terms of delaying how long these things are put up and also the cost. If you have to put them every few blocks as opposed to kind of one big tower, localities say, this is a great way for us to raise revenue. We're going to charge you, you know, $500 per small cell, and then we're going to charge you a $50 per year fee to do that. So if you're an internet service provider or a cellular company, and you're like, do I really want to go there with all these costs? I can just go to the next town where they're not going to charge me so much. And, you know, their profit margins are going to be bigger, right? That's where you're going to see the first kind of investment in these sorts of things outside of, you know, the large cities, you know, like your Charlotte or your New Orleans or whatever. So I would say that. And then the aesthetic issues. You know, the companies have been doing a really good job working with the towns, but, you know, you'll get a lot of NIMBYism. People, I don't want this big, gray, ugly looking thing in my light post or my, you know, traffic light or whatever. You know, that those are kind of the more reasonable concerns or practical mm-hmm. obstacles. But I would say, you know, the health issues are something that when we talk to legislators about 5G, that I don't say the legislators believe it, but their constituents certainly have, you know, heard about these things and share those concerns with their lawmakers. So, you know, for us to be winning at 5G, you know, arming local lawmakers with the knowledge that this is, you know, pretty safe is important. I would just say one other thing about the conspiracy theory. There was some great stuff a few months ago about how Russia is actually the one kind of pushing these 5G conspiracy theories. They don't have a great 5G play. They're falling really behind in communications equipment, but the same way they put out a lot of you know, fake news about the 2016 election, they've been putting out a lot of fake information about 5G on Russia Today. They've had a lot of so-called experts, you know, going on and saying that this causes cancer and all that stuff. And the most popular YouTube video talking about 5G causing cancer is in Russian.
Very interesting. When the Russians are involved, you know, you probably better double check.
Yes, absolutely. I would say that is good advice for anyone still listening to this podcast.
Well, Ray, do you have any other questions on the 5G front? I know we're about out of time.
Not on the 5G front, but I've got a couple of New Orleans related questions for Eric.
Of course you do. You love NOLA.
Yeah. So if we're coming to, I've been in New Orleans a lot of time. I used to live in Gulfport, Mississippi, so I've been over there a lot. But if someone from North Carolina was headed down to New Orleans, where should they go and what should they do? And more importantly, since it's the best food in the world, where should they eat at, Eric?
Oh my gosh, there are just so many choices. Again, when this kind of whole thing gets by, you are not going to find a cheaper ticket to New Orleans, and there's going to be hotel rooms galore. So great time for all of you guys to visiting. I know, you know, you're all going to have your Trump bucks. You haven't been going out, so come spend that money down in New Orleans. Some of my favorite places to go are Magazine Street Uptown. There's just all kinds of great places to go. Actually, my favorite beignets are on Magazine Street Uptown. They've stuffed them with green tea mochi and blueberries and all that kind of great stuff. There's a great sandwich shop called Turkey and the Wolf that's been one of the highest rated restaurants in the country. They have a great menu that changes every day of kind of homemade local creations, which are excellent. I would also say, of course, you have to come for Commanders, come for during the week, during lunch, and take advantage of those 25-cent martinis. You know, three martinis and a world-class lunch won't cost you any more than $35. It is the best deal in fine dining I think you can get in the entire United States. I'd also say that, you know, Jazz Fest got pushed back to the fall, so it's a great time to look at something else, to go see some great musical acts and go get some great food.
That sounds wonderful. I was actually in New Orleans my very first time in January, and can vouch for the amazing food over there. Really enjoyed the Carousel Bar.
It's an absolute classic. Yep.
I went there several times over the course of that trip and had so much fun. But yeah, so once this is all over, we need to have like a Civitas Pelican Institute field trip to downtown New Orleans and enjoy some of the stuff.
Yeah, that is where our offices are. It is a very dangerous place to be located because of so much good food, you know, good drinks, and just good people always, you know, willing to have say hi and have a lot of fun with you. So we'd always be happy to have you.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And where can people find more information about the Pelican Institute?
Yeah, they can go to pelicaninstitute.com. They can check out our Facebook page. It's just Pelican Institute. If you're interested about more on 5G and communication stuff, I had FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai on last week. We had a 30-minute conversation about telemedicine and online learning and working from home and all of these kind of connectivity things that have just become even more important during the time of Corona to keep people connected to their friends and family. I know people are going to hear this on Monday, but I suspect a lot of your listeners have been attending church online, doing those sorts of things. So it's more important to keep people connected now than ever before.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And Ray, Eric, you all have a wonderful week. Happy quarantining.
Yeah, happy quarantinis.